Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Billy Floyd, 28 years of volunteer and career experience, fire chief for North Myrtle Beach Fire Department in South Carolina. Billy was exposed to the fire service at a young age, being fortunate to watch and learn things from his father. As the head man in charge of his department, the mentality and focused mission Chief has is paramount if you want to have a successful organization. Make no mistakes about it, there is no perfect department out there. But Chief Floyd realizes that you must put your people first and foremost through communication and transparency for a successful outcome. With that, I present Chief Billy Floyd.
All right. So my name is Billy Floyd, and I'm currently the fire chief and the emergency preparedness director for the city of North Myrtle Beach Fire Department in North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, which is located in Horry County. I got my start in the fire service back in 1996 as a volunteer. I grew up in South Carolina in the PD Grand Strand area where I'm at now. My father was started in the volunteer fire service when I was about 5 or 6 years old. He actually served several years as the volunteer fire chief for the Nichols Volunteer Fire Department. He was actually the first paid chief for the town, making a whopping $50 a month to be chief. So I got to grow up with him being in that role of a firefighter and a fire chief. And was able to get started with the volunteer department there just a few months before my 16th birthday. We didn't have a junior program back then. At that time in South Carolina, you could actually be an interior firefighter at the age of 16. A couple of years later, it was in the early 2000s when they made the change that you had to be 18 or be part of a explorer program or junior program to get that. So I was actually, you know, when I started, I was driving fire trucks on a day license until I got my regular license. And once I turned 16, I could start doing my classes to get my interior certifications with that. So, you know, got started there with that as a volunteer. I had the opportunity in December of 2001 to go career for the city of Mullins, which was the closest town to the small town where I was at. It's actually where I graduated high school from. And I volunteered with them as well. I had started volunteering earlier in 2001 with them just to get some more experience. And I knew some of the guys that worked there full-time and some of the guys that volunteered and had the opportunity to take a full-time position in December of 2001. I had just started EMT class. Ironically, our first EMT class was scheduled for September 11th, 2001. And then obviously with everything that went on that Tuesday morning, they canceled our class and we ended up starting later on in the week and finished up shortly after December. I was able to get my EMT certification. So once I went to work full time for the city of Mullins, I also did part-time work for Marion County EMS. I do my shift at the fire department and then I go jump on the ambulance for a shift just to get more EMT experience. I got the opportunity back in 2005 to come work for the city of North Myrtle Beach. I was hired as what we call a firefighter PSO. At that time, the city of North Myrtle Beach was a public safety agency. There were separate fire departments and police departments, but you know, it was public safety. All the police officers carried bunker gear in their patrol cars and they would respond to major incidents to help the fire department. And then the fire department would supplement the PD staff for like large events, festivals, parades, things like that went on. I was hired whenever we opened our, at that time was the newest station, Station 5 in Barefoot Resort. And they wanted all the personnel that were going to staff that to be fully trained as fire and police because of the limited access. We had a swing bridge that accessed that area to get across to Intercoastal Waterway. A lot of that was still undeveloped on the backside. So there was a dirt road to get in the back way. And they wanted to make sure that the people that were staffed at that station could do law enforcement if something happened and the bridge was turned and other officers couldn't get to them. So there were those of us that got hired for that or got moved to that station were fully cross-trained. So I was actually fully cross-trained as what we call a class one law enforcement officer in South Carolina. And I held that certifications for about 12 years, where I actually did some part-time work when I wasn't with the fire department in North Myrtle, where I kept that law enforcement cert up for a little while, just doing that. I moved up pretty quickly in the ranks when I came here. I had a little bit of experience that I brought in, and ended up in about 2 years, I had moved over and took a position in the training division. So June of 2007, I left shift work, went to day work from basically from that point on. I was in the training division as a lieutenant, got moved up to a captain in the training division. I had started really having an interest in training back in like 1998, 99 as a volunteer. I was starting to coordinate training for our volunteer department. When I went to work full-time for Mullins, I was doing the training for the full-time staff of coordinating. I started teaching for our South Carolina Fire Academy in the early 2000s as well. So training was just really something that I fell in love with and felt like I wanted to do in a career standpoint. So getting that opportunity was something that I look forward to. And I held that position until the fall of 2008. And I actually left the city of North Myrtle Beach and went to work for Horry County Fire Rescue, which is the county that we're in, bigger department. I had an opportunity to go and take a position in the training division there with them as a captain. I got to focus on officer development and instructor development for the department, while getting to help with the career recruit schools and the volunteer recruit schools. And we had a pretty good group that was working there at the time. We were able to really all gel and grow off of each other with the experience that we had. Was a really good opportunity, really great opportunity. Was very fortunate to be able to be put in that position. It's really rewarding now that I've watched so many of those guys that went through a recruit school as a brand new firefighter for us then that are now in company officer roles as lieutenants, captains. Some of them have moved into chief officer roles. So pretty cool to know that we were there at the start of that and where they're at in their careers now. I was very fortunate. I hated to leave the city of North Myrtle Beach when I did, because I really loved working here. There were some things going on the job at the time, and there were some personal things going on. It was just a better opportunity for me to go work for Horry County. It was closer to home. You know, I was driving 45 miles one way to come to the city. And when I took the job at Horry County, my drive cut down to 4 miles. So, you know, saved a lot of money, a lot of gas, was a little bit better on the home life and doing that. But, you know, I knew that I wanted to try to work my way back into the city at some point in time. And I got that opportunity back in January of 2013. I came back to the city. I took over as division chief of training, which was the position I left. They just had a title change, a couple of things changed in with it. I came back as division chief of training and held that position up until May of 2021. We were finally able to add a deputy chief position in our department. That was something we didn't have. We had a fire chief, and then underneath that fire chief, we had a training chief, which was myself, and we had a fire marshal, which was a division chief. So we really didn't have a lot of rank structure from the operational side. And we got the opportunity to expand in 2021 and add a deputy chief position. And I was fortunate enough to be able to move into that and take on that role and held that until April of last year, when our fire chief that we had finally decided he had been with us 8 years. He had retired from the city of Raleigh, came down to us in 2015, did his 8 years and was ready to go ahead and just get that second retirement, call it a career, and go and relax some and go into. And fortunately, he was absolute awesome fire chief to work for, learned a lot from him. And he set me up to be able to easily transition into the position. And thankfully, our city administrator and city staff, put trust in me to be able to slide in that position. And I was able to be appointed as the fire chief last year with it. So about a week ago has been a year. And I've survived at this point so far, so must be doing pretty decent with it right now. But again, I honestly, for me, I really had in my own mindset, I really wanted to get to a deputy chief role, and I felt like I would be satisfied in retiring at that point. If a fire chief opportunity had come up, it was something that interested me, you know, if it did come available. But yeah, I was pretty much content working for my chief and getting to my point of retirement and going out as number two, and you know, that position came up and it was something I wasn't going to turn down. And again, I think we've got a lot of good movement in our department, a lot of things going work into to where I felt like I could come in and do a little bit with that as well for whatever, how much time I have left in with it to help make a difference to set us up for what's down the road with whoever takes over next. So interesting to see. Question is, how much longer do I stay? That's what I get asked. I'm going to stick around as long as I can, that I feel like I'm making a difference with things to go in, whether that's 5 years, whether it's longer, whether it's shorter to go into. I always said that I didn't want to be in a position where in some places where you've got somebody that stays in a position way too long and it stunts growth for the department. If things are starting to get stale, then there's things that need to be kind of moved or changed in with that. And so for me, it's kind of, we've got a lot of good forward movement and progress going. I want to try to help guide as much of that as I can. We've got some really awesome guys that work for us here that help in with that. And so we'll just see where the pathway goes and how long that stays. And once I feel like I can't be an active contributor to that anymore, then it'll be time to step aside and let somebody else jump into that.
Okay. All right. Well, Chief, like I said, first of all, thank you for taking the time to do this. The reason why that it sparked my interest with you is I got a call from Jason Janitas, and he was like, "Hey, man," he's like, I got a guy for you." I was like, "All right, cool." He's like, "He's a fire chief." I'm like, "Okay." He was like, I guess at the time he was like, "This fire chief participated in writ drills with his guys." And I'm like, "I'm sorry, come again." Like, you broke up. And he was like, "No, I'm telling you, he was with his guys doing writ drills." And I was like, "Okay." So me saying that is you, me being a fireman, you don't typically hear that a lot from guys that their fire chief gets in gear, gets in the trenches with the boots on the ground. So my question to you is,
How do I make that happen?
that, and like it's one of those things, like it's good, like it's good for the boots to see that. It goes a long way.
It really does. But again, that's something that is it you have to have all the pieces falling right for there's a lot of things that, and everybody knows that there's a lot of things that go on at the role of fire chief that at the position of a firefighter, you're not privy to, you don't know what all goes into that. And though, so there are some fire chiefs that are busting their butts out there every day for their departments that are behind the curtains, and they're not getting seen by their guys, but man, they're busting their tails. And there's a lot of things that they're fighting for, things that they're working, whether they're working through a county administration, a city administration, a private fire board, or whoever it may be. It's a I promise you, for a majority of the fire chiefs that are out there, it's not the fact that they don't want to be out there. It's difficult to be able to find that time to go into. For us, we're growing as a department. We're not a major big department when you compare us to some other places around, but we're not a small department either. And so for me, even when I moved into the role of deputy chief, I wanted to make sure that I could still keep as much of a connection with those guys as possible. I'm not out there riding with guys every day. I'm not out there. I would love to. I'm not out there as much as I would like to be. I had a conversation with one of my guys yesterday. As you know, I tried to set myself a goal last year that, every Friday I was going to just go get out and hit up a station or hang out. And I quickly realized that was not as realistic as I thought it would be. Our plates get full to go into. So when I get the opportunity to jump out or go, I try to take advantage of that. I was very fortunate to be able to, I was able to snag some time to do some writ drills with our guys. I missed the live burns. We were doing live burns right before that, and I had planned on being down there for that. It didn't plan out the way of going into. I think from my perspective of thinking from the fire level, as well as from the chief level of going to, I think it does a lot of good when guys can see that. And it's like anything else, though, you want it in small doses. You don't want your fire chief at every training evolution you do. You don't want your fire chief showing up at every call that's out there. But every now and then, being able to, if you're able to participate, and that's the thing about it. Like, I don't want to show up and just watch. If I'm going to be there, I want to be an active participant so they can see that, working into as well. I went and I had the chance to go hang out at a station yesterday for a little while, and medical call came in, and I jumped on and took it with them, just to ride with them and kind of take it in or go into. To me, I think it's important if a chief is able to do that, it keeps you grounded a lot to know what's going on. We do. There are so many fights and things that we're in on a daily basis, from budgetary standpoints, from strategic planning, from, I tell my guys all the time when we talk, we're playing chess, not checkers. That analogy gets used a lot of times. But sometimes we, as at a chief level, we get so focused in on planning for the future that at times we do lose a little a connection with the present, with what's going on. And any time that we can take the opportunity to do so, I think is great with that. And again, that, a fire chief of a larger department, that's going to be very challenging for them to be able to get out. They may be able to see some guys, but it's going to be, impossible for them to make their rounds to see everybody all the time. It's still semi-realistic for me to be able to do that here. So I try to take advantage as much as I can with that. And so any opportunity that I get with that, where if I can just go spend a couple of hours in the bay or take advantage of a training scenario that they're doing down there, pop in on a call here or there to kind of chat with them. I just think it helps me keep my focus on here's the big steps of things that I'm working towards, and this is why I'm doing it. This, I'm doing it for these guys and keeping grounded in with that. That's kind of the mindset I look at with it.
Okay, love it. Love the mindset. With that being said, what are your expectations from your department, from you, from the men and women that are, riding your trucks?
They hear it from me all the time. Just do your job. Do their job. Take care of the small things. And they get tired of hearing me repeat it. I know some of them get tired of repeating that. Focus on the things that are within their control. I don't need a fire lieutenant trying to worry about budget. That's my job. If they do the things that they need to do, if they take care of those small things, it allows me to do the big things. Everything's a piece of the puzzle, and all the little things that they do help me when I'm trying to go justify for whatever it is that I'm working for to go into. I can show results because our guys are doing that. If we're trying to make the push to get newer apparatus, we're showing the steps that we're doing to take care of what we have currently. If we're trying to upgrade equipment or things, here's what we've done and work into. And so it's important for those guys to make sure they're taking care of those little things. If they can show that, those little things, when you add them all together amongst, all three of our shifts, all of our guys are going into, all those little things end up becoming very big things. And so if they can take care of the things that they need to, and our guys, they really do. I've got an awesome group underneath me that works, with me with everything that we do. We've spread out the division of labor as much as we can to everybody has their part to work into. And so it allows me to stay focused where I need to. We talk about it quite often that if I've got to take time out of my day to go solve a problem at Cherry Grove at Station 2 up there, when that's something that should be handled in-house by the company officer or battalion chief at best, then that's taking me away from what I need to be doing to work into. So if they're taking care of the little things, it allows the big things to grow. And again, my guys, they do a fantastic job of that, but I know they get tired of hearing me say it. Just stay focused on the little things, because the little things will grow into big things. If you ignore those little things, then they become big problems. They become bigger issues. So, it allows me to stay focused where I'm at, allows them to keep focused where they're going, and allows us to be able to then go and see progress. And a part of that to go goes into, and I know with some of the questions you sent, we're talking about communication. And that's where that ties in too, is if I'm trying to sell something to my guys, they got to know what they're buying. I can't sell it to them if they don't know what it is. And so communication is a big part of that. And if they know what our vision is, if they know the short-term goals that we're working on, if they know some of the details of the long-term plans, obviously we can't always talk about everything. It sucks. It is what it is, but we can't always let everything out the bag. But if we're able to, if they know what they're working towards, then they have buy-in and they have more ownership of it, and they're going to put forth more effort with that. If they're just doing things blindly, you can't expect them to push extra effort when they don't know what they're pushing for. And with that, so again, that's my message to them, is just take care of your job, do your things, help those that need help with theirs. We're in this stuff together. It's not one person leading the show, making the change. It's all of us, and it takes all of us to be able to make that work.
Fantastic. Okay. You were recently at FDIC, so I'm sure I'm pretty sure you probably did, but I'm sure you heard the Chief Thompson's keynote
Oh,
speech.
absolutely. Absolutely.
And so my question to you is, and this is perfect because I've always wanted to ask a fire chief this. So the term aggressiveness, or as Chief Thompson said, being a cowboy, it can get misconstrued. And I've said it
Absolutely.
before, no fire chief wants to ever go through a line of duty death. But with that being said, I'm assuming you expect your guys to perform at that structure fire at the highest level they can for the community they serve.
Absolutely. So, this has kind of always been my stance, even from a training side of it, of going into I from a personal standpoint, I hate the word aggressive. I think it gets misconstrued by both sides of the argument for what it is. I love those that will have that conversation and mention that that should be our normal. We're out there to do a specific job. And that's what we're working to go into. So, you've got, we love, and I don't know why, but in the fire service, we love to have polar opposites always arguing, and then the truth gets lost in the middle somewhere to go into. So when you talk about aggressiveness, you've got the one group that, they have to sensationalize that. And if I'm aggressive, I'm better than everybody else. I'm cooler. I'm out here doing the job, the things to get done. And then you've got that other group that automatically associate aggressiveness with recklessness, that they're just out there, freelancing, being the cowboys that we label that. I was labeled as that several times in the past of going into. But at the end of the day, it boils down to at the firefighter level, if that's a good firefighter for me, if that's somebody that I want out there responding to my family, if they're, in need, that firefighter is built up with unbridled passion. They have an unbridled passion to want to do this job, to want to do everything in their power that they can to help anybody they can in need. That's what I want. That's what I want out of my guys. I want unbridled passion for them to do the job. And then it's the people that we put in the position as leaders, the company officers, the chief officers, the fire chief. We're responsible for putting the bridle on and keeping them focused on the task at hand. So I want them to be unbridled. I want them to be ready to do whatever it is needed to do that. But I need a good decision maker and a good risk management processor to lead them to say, this is where we're going with this, and this is what we're doing with that to control that. So, I'll use words like, we're not aggressive, we're assertive. We're calculated, we're competent, we're confident in what we do, we're solid decision makers, and we're calculated risk takers. Those words aren't cool. They're not hashtags. You're not going to do hashtag calculated firefighter. That's not selling t-shirts or anything. And then on the other side of that, you can't associate reckless with being competent and calculated and confident. But that's what it boils down to, is that, everybody's going to determine what that aggressiveness is in their own way. People are going to use it for whatever they're trying to push forward with going into. It would just be really nice from the fire service perspective if we could ever get to the point of just accepting that we are, in fact, held to a higher standard than everybody else. And we need to push ourselves a little harder, but we've got to be smart in our decision making to know when is too far, to not put ourselves in any gross negligence or danger in what we're trying to work and do. There's risk with what we do. There is danger in what we do, but we have to understand the difference between that danger that's calculated measures and something that's just completely idiotic for us to go out there that we know is going to get ourselves hurt or killed with that. We've got to use that fear and respect of what we have, with that living, breathing fire to help guide us for solid decision making. I mentioned it numerous times in numerous training classes that I've done, and I'm sure other people have as well with what they've done. The most important tool that we take off that fire apparatus that when we get to the call is our brain. It's not the tool we choose to carry. It's not the tick. It's not the hook. It's not the Halligans. It's our brain. We've got to process a lot of information in a short amount of time, and the better we train ourselves to do that, the better we're going to be able to do our jobs. The more calculated we can be, the further we can push ourselves, knowing what our limits are.
Fantastic. Okay. Love it. Love the answer. Side note, were you astounded when Chief Rhodes announced that Chief Thompson has a 96% retention rate for his department?
I was not, because I knew that. And
Okay.
that speaks to the volume of leader that Chief Thompson is. And you know, when you're able to, that's a great example of a department that has buy-in, that they know that their chief's not just all talk, that he walks that walk in with it, that he hasn't forgot his place where he's from, where he's came from, and what that to go into. He is he's very calculated in what he does. He's very smart. In the things that he do, somebody that I've watched for several years, and how he operates and does, and the things that he chooses to do or go into. He's looking out for his guys, but he's not a reckless fire chief. He's not out there, just letting all things go into. There are certain things that I'm sure there are things that he does that his guys don't agree with, but they understand. And go into, and I think that's a great example of having open communication, and your guys being able to trust the leaders that they have, and knowing that they have a, they have that safe and comfortable environment to function in as a person and as a firefighter. And that speaks volumes to be able to do that. That would be any fire chief's dream, to maintain a retention rate, to that level to go into, especially in today's society, where we're seeing, and it's not a knock to anybody that we have going, it's just the nature of where we're at in society today, of that turnover rate from firefighters completely leaving the fire service altogether, or getting that better opportunity to go somewhere else where they're able to make more money, set up their family better, or things to go into. When you can hold your valuable guys like that, then that just shows succession for that agency, and growth that, their future leaders are right there homegrown in what they're doing, and they're going to be able to keep that environment going for however long they can with it. So, I hope that's something that he's able to continue to push into, to maintain that, and other departments can work to figure out how to get better with what we have with retention rates as well.
Okay. All right. With you being the fire chief of your department, when it comes to your company officers and your leaders, what exactly are you looking for, and what is your expectation when said person decides to jump in that role of being a company officer?
Every department is different regionally. Around the environments are different to go into. From a chief officer standpoint, when you're looking at developing a promotional process of going on, you've got to make sure and understand that you learn that to how to be a good reader of people, and understand, there are certain aspects of the job that we can teach. And we can train, and we can take somebody who may not have as much leadership skills and ability, and we can give them classes, and we can put them in environments to improve of that. If they're not a good person, it's not going to help. And at the start of it for me is, at the top of my list, and this is not just for company officers, this for me is as a firefighter as well, it is, your integrity, the type of person you are, goes a long way. I need somebody who's in the right mindset, and I need somebody that has integrity that we can trust, and has empathy for others, especially in the company officer level. You've got to have empathy for the people that work with you. We have so many different personalities that we deal with out there, that is one of the highest things for me, that I've got to ensure, if I'm going to sign off on putting somebody in charge of a company, of a shift, or anything else to go into, that they have that empathy to be able to communicate with their guys in the way that they need to. They've got the integrity that's there. They may be lacking in confidence, and we can build that up. They may be lacking in decision-making skills because of experience that they don't have with that. And so, that's a big part of it to me, is looking at those characteristics. And again, I look at those same things from a hiring standpoint for firefighter as well. I've for years, we kind of had a reputation, and I think still do, of we're the pickiest people around to come get a job at. We are very picky on who we allow in, and I'm glad having that stigma in with it, because we don't allow just anybody to walk in our door. You know, you can have the thickest certificate book walking around that's out there. You can have a stacked resume, but if you can't get along with people, if you don't have empathy, if you don't have integrity, if I can't trust you, then that's not something that we want as part of our organization. So to me, from a company officer standpoint, that's what I look at. And then you've got to have, obviously they got to have the capabilities of being able to function and do that job. And I know, like, one of the things you in the questions you had listed was, like, the years of service clause. And unfortunately, we found ourselves a lot of departments, and we were the same way, where for years we only required 2 years of service to be eligible to test. That's not being fair to that person. You know, I'm not saying that you can't be ready in 2 years, but you're asking a lot of somebody to be able to be able to make that transition and change over in that time frame. But it was because of retention rates, it was because of turnover, that we were having to put ourselves in those positions to do things like that, to try to give them as much on the job training as we could once they got in the position. And then the issue is, while they may be a solid decision maker on the fire ground, they may have good, strategy and tactic skills, and they were lacking in the interpersonal communications. They didn't know how to deal with the person in the station. They didn't know how to deal with the human resources aspect of it, and would get themselves in trouble in those areas. You know, we made the change a couple of years back that you now have to be 4 years in service for us to be eligible to promote. In a perfect world, I'd have it at eight, but there's not many fire departments that could realistically sustain that. So putting it at four at least gets us to a point where we're getting guys comfortable, enough to know what they're getting and working into, and having those conversations about, as a young firefighter, some of them get that, that focus on, I want the gold badge, I want the bugles, I want the title to go with it. And so we have a lot of conversations about responsibility and accountability, and that those are two different things. A lot of people want responsibility, but they don't want to be accountable for it. And you've got to be accountable for it. And as a chief, as a leader of a department, you've got to hold yourself accountable to that, and you've got to hold those guys accountable when they can't do that job or go into. So, we look at that. We try to take as best of those measures as we can to when we try to get people ready for promotions. We've taken some steps in the past couple of years to change up our rank structure a little bit, to give a better progression of moving from a firefighter to a firefighter first class, which is kind of like our relief driver, to an engineer position. And the, you know, there's criteria to meet that engineer, because that engineer can serve in an acting officer role if the officer's out, to kind of get them built ready for that, and then into the company officer role. So we're trying to do better. And I'll say this across the board in South Carolina, a lot of departments are doing a much better job in getting our guys ready now than what we used to, of just go take a test and see what happens, and then we'll let you figure out the rest after the fact. We're doing a better job. We've got more programs and things that are out there to get them a little bit better mindset in to what they're going to expect with that, so it's not a culture shock for them when they make that change over, because that's probably the toughest transition in a fire service career, is going from a firefighter to a company officer. And I tell my guys all the time, it's because, when you're a firefighter, it is perfectly acceptable to sit around the kitchen table, to sit around the bay floor, to sit on the front pad of the apparatus, and you talk about they're not doing this for us. They don't, that they. Well, as a company officer, you have to remove the word they from your vocabulary, because it's we. You're part of administration now. You're part of that command staff. You're part of that they that you used to talk about. And that's a hard adjustment. That's a hard pill to swallow sometimes for guys, is that you can't use they anymore, because now you're we. You're part of that to go into, and you've got to have understand how that dynamic changes, that relationship that you have with your firefighters. They're going to look at you differently once, that shirt color changes, or that badge color changes, that title changes, because now you are part of that administration, being a company officer. Some adjust to that well, and some it's a little bit tougher for them to kind of get into that. And so, from a chief's perspective, those are things that we have to keep a watch on and mindful of Is that person having a difficult transition? And then if they are, instead of just, putting the brakes to them and telling them they suck, what can we do to get them better? And how can we get them over that hump to get them where they need to be at to be effective with what they do?
Sir. Yes, sir. Now, I know, depending on not everybody's going to agree with different policies and rules that comes down from administration. But as a company officer, if you come in with the mentality of, well, I don't care, to me, that trickles down to your crew where it's like, well, they don't care because they see you don't care. So in return, it's a it's a bad slope of things that come
It
down
is.
because you don't, your station pride goes down, your the way the apparatus goes down, training goes down. So what I'm trying to get what I want to say to you is it's okay not to be able to agree on everything,
Absolutely.
but you need to focus on what you can control, which is your crew, your firehouse.
Well, not only that, but and we have this conversation quite often with our guys is the same thing as you just said. If you come in with the mindset that you don't agree with it, those guys may agree with it, but they're not going to tell you that because they see you're pissed about it, or they haven't even read it yet. So they don't even know what you're talking about, but they're going to automatically side with you. So, we have that conversation with our guys is that you don't have to agree with everything that we do, and that's perfectly fine. If you don't agree with it, what's your solution? What's the alternative? What are your suggestions? Don't just tell me it sucks. Tell me it sucks because of this. What can we do to change or do that? And we will evaluate that. We will look at that. But until we make a change, it is still your job as a company officer to enforce what that is that we're doing to go into. And I think part of that, you get that you'll see the mentality in different departments of when you allow those guys, on shift to be part of. Nobody wants to be on the policy committee. Let's be honest. It's hard to find guys to volunteer for that unless it's something specific that they know they're interested in. But when we can get some representation, from the different levels of firefighter, engineer drivers, lieutenants in that to have a say in that, or at least make sure from a chief level that you're providing a comfortable enough environment that they can say, hey, listen, you just put this out and I understand what you're saying, but I think you're missing the point of this. I think this would be a better way to suit that or go into. Then we can have those conversations. And I'm thankful that I've got guys that are comfortable with that. We're redoing a lot of our policies and updating. We separated from the public safety concept at the end of 2021. So we're having to update a lot of our stuff to make sure that. And it hasn't been any big changes with what we're doing, but just some wording of things. But there were a couple policies or guidelines that were there that we were kind of restricted on because of being tied to law enforcement at one point, and now we're not, that we can be a little bit more leeway on. And so we've made some adjustments with some things on that. And a lot of that's been from our, hey, can we do this now? Or can we look at doing this differently to go into and then having, and this goes back to even, when Chief Spain was still here with us before I took over as fire chief, he'd take that stuff in. Hey, okay, yeah, we could look at this. Let's develop that or go into and making sure those guys know that they have an environment that they can voice that and feel like it's going to be heard, not just, well, you send an email and nobody's ever going to read it or go into. And so if at the top, we're doing our part in that, I think that helps with that trickle down that you don't run into that. But absolutely so, from the station level with that, if that company officer is coming in with a poor mindset, it's gonna affect those other ones, whether they realize it or not. Sometimes, you may not realize that what that bad company officer is doing to you until you either get to a different company officer or you promote yourself and those bad tendencies start coming out you without you realizing it. That happens a lot. And guys just don't understand it. But when you're exposed to something and you don't realize it, it starts showing when you're out of that environment.
Absolutely. Okay. The days of fire chiefs telling, which it still occurs, but the days of because I said so, typically doesn't, in my experience, doesn't go well for, it's not good for the department, it's not good for the morale and things of that nature. So, are you, with you being a fire chief, are you open to like respectful criticism. Like, let's just say you came out with a policy, couple company officers didn't like it. We scheduled a meeting and calmly, collectively as humans, we don't go in yelling, we don't go in guns blazing, but we go in there and go, chief, this is why we don't like this. Are you open to hearing the other side? And are you okay knowing like you do make mistakes?
I encourage my guys all the time to, when there are things that you don't agree with or there's an issue with, bring it up. Don't sit on it to go into, bring it up and let's have discussion. And they do a good job with that. Of if there's, a lot of times, thankfully, we've got a very good group and a lot of us kind of came up together and worked into. And I've had different connections with a lot of guys that work with us now, whether, I did their initial training for them or we worked together at a different department, or I taught the classes for them when they were somewhere else to go into. So, we have a good relationship in to go into. And so, and respect goes both ways. I respect what they do. They have that respect for me as a person, not just because of how many bugles I carry to go into. So that's something that I've been very fortunate of with the positions I've been in to keep that open communication. I think a part of it for some of my guys is they're scared if they jump too quick at me, then my old training days is going to come out when I used to be a hellion running around, and they don't want me breaking bad on them like I did back in the recruit days of going into. But no, we can sit down and have conversations, and I'm fortunate enough. I laid it out to my guys when I moved to deputy chief and then in the fire chief role of that. Understanding what my open door policy is. A lot of places use an open door policy and it's kind of misconstrued. But for me, that open door policy is you can walk in my door anytime and we can have conversations about life. We can have conversations about anything you need to go into. But if it's something that's specific departmental related that needs to go to chain of command, you're not jumping people to come to me. I'm gonna send you right back down to have that conversation. So if we've got if there's a policy thing going into and I've got somebody that comes to me, the first question I usually ask is, have you talked to your battalion chief? Have you talked to your lieutenant? Have you talked to the deputy chief to go into? And let's get together and figure it out to go into. But that's the only way we work into. The because I said so mentality was what, that's what I was originally accustomed to when I started. And that was the accepted normal because you just didn't ask questions. You just did what you had to do and go into. And that was an acceptable environment at that time frame. Whether you agree with it or not, it worked and it was acceptable. But we as people have changed, and I think that's something that we're seeing more and more leaders get comfortable with is when you had that original stigma of what we call this Y generation coming along. Why are they asking me why? We never asked that. We just did what we were told. Where these are analytical thinkers. They need to understand the process to know what they're doing. So our role is to make sure they know when is the appropriate time to ask why. At a fire ground is not the time to ask why. Let's talk about it before or talk about it after, but you need to have a good understanding. And so, I appreciate the fact that we have guys now that want to understand things a lot better because that just helps them get themselves better to promote down the line. It allows them to be better in their jobs that they do. So absolutely, anytime that we can sit down and have a conversation about this, let's look at this strategy or tactic that we're doing. Let's look at this equipment. Let's look at this policy and how that impacts. Because sometimes it boils down to, if it's got to be this way, there's something that they may not be aware of. And we can have that conversation. Hey guys, I appreciate it, but let me explain to you why it has to be, why we don't have wiggle room. There's a federal standard for this. There's a state statute for that. There's a city ordinance that says this. There's a best practices that calls for that. There's a lawsuit pending because there's a reason why we're in that predicament or why we're making an adjustment for that. And they may not be privy to that. It's like, okay, well, that makes sense to go in. And again, sometimes it's because we're all human beings. I'll put something down on paper if I'm looking or going into, and I typically will have guys kind of look over things before we send them out. I always pick a couple officers and say, hey, check this over, look at it, read it, make sure it makes sense before I push this out to go into. And it's sometimes just as simple as I just didn't think about something to go into. Again, I try to stay connected as much as I can, but I haven't been on shift since 2007. All right. I try to stay up to date on as many things as I can do or go out to work into. I stopped as an active volunteer in 2013. So there are going to be some parts of that that I'm just not thinking, or my viewpoint is what it was 10 years ago, and I'm out of that realm of being that close into the environment, and need to be reminded of that sometimes. So yeah, anytime that we can have that dialogue, and I think that's for any department. If a chief can open themselves up and have that type of dialogue, it's gonna that stuff has a ripple effect as well, and that stuff, everybody else notices that, and they see that, and okay, we can affect this. We are a change agent here. We can, our opinion does matter. We are a part of this. We got buy-in for that. And I think it's healthy for the department as you go.
Definitely. And the whys is important. And like you said, privy to information, like when it involves personnel, we can't divulge that. But instead of just sending out an email, just saying this,
No more ice cream after
explain,
5 o'clock. Well, I.
right. Like you explain and you let people know why this decision was made. Because one thing that I've seen is when a blanket email, a blanket statement comes out, firemen start making up their own stories, which
Absolutely.
then makes the problems 10 times worse.
I hate blanket emails, and I've had to use them at times. Sometimes it's just the best way to approach things. I absolutely despise them. So, for the past couple of years, I've had a whatever you want to call it, buzzword of the year or whatever. And in 2023, I started out the year, my word, and it's still on my board here in the office, is accountability. And I explained it to my guys. I'm not sending a blanket email unless I have to. If you screwed up, I'm talking to you, or your supervisor's talking to you. We're gonna fix you. If I've got, right now I've got 18 company officers throughout all three shifts, six per shift. I got 18 lieutenants that are covering those six staff companies we have each day. If I've got one lieutenant having an issue, then why should I have to waste the time of the 17 that are doing their job right to fix the one?
Right.
Sometimes what happened with that one, it wasn't an egregious thing. It wasn't a willful disregard. It was a, hey, I just didn't know. Well, I might have 12 others that don't know it either. So let me push this out. And so the blankets sometimes work with that to go into, because now, hey, just FYI, this kind of came to our attention. You need to be mindful of this as well. So there's a place for that to go into, but I've just never been a fan of, if I screwed up, tell me what I did so I can fix it. Don't make me guess or come up with my own story. And if I'm doing my job right, then why am I having to spend time read about what somebody else is doing if it's not impacting me to go into? That's always been just kind of the mindset I've looked at it.
Okay. All right. With all my questions I have for you, I completely forgot to ask because I don't know. Can you tell us about the size of Myrtle Beach? How many stations, and personnel, things of that nature?
So it's North Myrtle Beach.
No, I'm sorry, North Myrtle Beach. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I love my city of Myrtle Beach, guys. We are
North.
North Myrtle Beach. We are growing as a lot of people don't realize that the difference between the city of Myrtle Beach and the city of North Myrtle Beach, because we're all conglomerated into that Grand Strand area. We've got about a oh gosh, I think it's now down to probably like a 2.5 mile stretch that we call the no man's land. That's Horry County, unincorporated still, that separates the city of Myrtle and North Myrtle. And we're annexing more property on the west side of our waterway, that we're actually to a point now where for the first time ever, our city limits are touching to go into. And we have a great relationship with those guys. Those are awesome guys down there. But we operate currently out of five stations throughout our city. I don't have it right in front of me. I think we're right about like 20 square miles
Okay.
or so. We've got about roughly 9.5 miles of direct coastline. We're the last municipality in what I call the armpit of South Carolina on the northern coast. Before you get to the unincorporated little stretch of Little River, before you get to the state line of North Carolina. We operate five stations. We operate six staff companies a shift. We have five engine companies and one truck company that operate all those five stations. We have a battalion chief that's on shift as well. So a full shift for us right now, we're running 19, because we run three personnel if we're at full staff, and we run three personnel to each of those apparatus. We've got plans on the books right now. We'll be taking delivery of a heavy rescue towards the end of this year. first of next year. That's going to be a replacement piece for an older one that we have. That rescue was never staffed. It was crawl staffed out of our main station. And we're working towards doing staffing for that. Still don't have all the finals of what that's going to look like yet, but that'll be something that we get into 2025 and kind of roll out or go into. That'll help us add with that. We will hopefully be breaking ground on our newest station probably first of the year next year. And it's confusing people because we call it Station 7. It'll actually be our sixth station, but it's Fire Station 7, and it's on the south end of our city off of Highway 31, the Carolina Bays Parkway. We had a new industrial park that was developed over the past year and a half or so. UPS put a distribution center there about a year and a half, 2 years ago now. Pepsi Bottling Company just relocated there and got up and running in the past few months. And a couple of weeks ago, it was announced Amazon's putting a same-day delivery distribution center there, and they're supposed to be up and running by the end of the year if they stay on track. We've got numerous homes being built back there, some multi-families back there as well. So, you know, that station we're hoping will get online sometime in the 2026 timeframe. And that'll bring another truck company for us, another engine company, and another battalion chief if we're able to stay on the staffing model that we're pushing for to go in with that. We average a little over 5,000 calls a year. I think 3 years ago, we finally broke 5,000. We were kind of stuck in that 4,000, 4,500 world for a while. 2 years ago, we actually spiked up. We broke 6,000. That was kind of an anomaly year for us, though. We had Hurricane Ian in 2022. And so we ran like 200 calls in one day. We got hit pretty hard, you know, with that hurricane. So that pushed us over that limit. So I think we'll probably this year, we'll probably be above that 5,500 range, you know, maybe close to that six again. But, you know, we got people steady moving in here, people steady going. So, we've got a lot of good things we've learned years ago. There's no real off season for us anymore. It's year round now. People are coming to the Grand Strand area, and while our official population is only 18,000, on any given day we could have 40, 50, 60,000 people running around the city because of, you know, tourist vacationers, things coming into. So it keeps us pretty busy and running.
Okay. And is your personnel ALS or BLS?
We're BLS. We're a first responder. Okay. So we're all EMTs. Our guys are EMTs. We have a couple guys that are paramedics, but they only operate at the BLS level. We don't do any transports. We don't have any ambulances. So plug, if anybody wants to come work at the beach and you don't want an ambulance, North Myrtle Beach is, we don't have ambulances here. Horry County covers the ambulances for us in the city limits. I mean, we work really great with Horry County Fire Rescue. They cover the medic units for the county itself. And City of Myrtle Beach has a couple ambulances that they operate, you know, under the Horry County system as well to work into. But we do first responder. So our guys are EMT basics. We do first responder and turn that over to the medics once they get on scene for transport.
Okay. All right. And Chief, before we head out, is there any tip that you'd like to give out to anyone that feels like, you know, like to try not to get sucked in that portal of, well, if they don't care, I don't care. Like, we need to remember what the mission is.
Yeah. It's tough. You know, we get, there are so many distractions and so many things that all of us battle with each and every day. I'm really glad to see the push on mental health as it is now to break that stigma from what a lot of us have dealt with over the years to go into. A lot of us, you know, have personal stories to share with that. You know, I you know, when I went back and listened to some of the guys that you've had on recently, man, just to hear their stories, you know, for some of those guys that it doesn't take a lot of years in the business to grab that. That's what some don't have to understand. I could be 1 week on the job and deal with it. I can deal with it because of things through my personal life. There's a lot of distractors that we deal with out there more so now than anywhere else. And then I, you know, with all the advantages that we have of the technology today, I think that also hurts us as well. With just the instant everything of social media spotlighting, you know, if you get somebody who's in a rut and then they're seeing all this other stuff on social media that, let's be honest, you don't know if it's real or not. Some people live those social media lives and it's not what's really going on to go into. That hampers things to go into. I think we've got to learn, and I think we are doing a much better job at it, of how to take care of ourselves and each other from the mental standpoint. We've been pushing for several years of looking out for each other from the physical fitness standpoint, and that's crucial. That's important in what we do. But the mental health capacity of it, when you're on shift and I'll just use a 24/48 shift, for example. When you're working with somebody for a third of your life, you think you know them pretty well, and then something happens and you realize you don't know them at all. I went through some personal things myself years ago that it surprised, some of my guys, some of the struggles that I was dealing with, because I did a good job at hiding it. I didn't let people know what was dealing with that they're going into. I was dealing with some issues with it. I was one that, instead of choosing a vice of alcohol or drugs or anything else, I chose a vice of burying myself into work. So I would spend 15, 16 hours in the office to try to hide from the issues that I was dealing with. And I did a really good job at masking that until a point that I couldn't. And some people started taking notice of that, and it finally opened my eyes up to it. And then once I realized that I was just as impacted as what I'd seen other people do, it really changed my perspective on not sweating the small things, not letting those things aggravate me to where I couldn't perform and do my job, or if I was taking too much of that home and impacting the home life to go into. So, I had to kind of learn how to redo some things myself, and it really changed my perspective on a lot of things. And I try to now share those conversations when I have guys that go through their struggles and deal. And we have been absolutely blessed and fortunate in our department here. We have a full-time public safety chaplain. We had one of our fire marshals that had been doing it in a part-time role for the past almost 10 years. And the city was gracious enough. Last year, we did some restructuring. When I came on board as fire chief, when our police chief that we have, her and I have came up through our careers together, and she took over as police chief a couple months before I did fire chief. Our predecessors had started laying the groundwork to get that in place, and then we were able to kind of take that ball and finish it out to where we've got our guys a point of contact in our department that can help them with things, and he's got great contacts around the state, and we're seeing people utilize that that we don't know about, because that's not my job to know who's taking advantage of that to go into, but
Right.
we know it's being utilized, and we're pushing that importance of mental health. And so I think more departments that do that, more company officers that are looking out for their guys, more of just live this brotherhood that we talk about all the time, and make sure that we're doing our best to look out for each other, that when the guys are on shift, they can fully trust each other with what they do, goes a long way. If you take care of those little things, I said it earlier, if you take care of those little things, and we take care of our people, it goes a long way with what we work in or do. One thing for me, it's just as simple, especially from a chief perspective of going into, for me, my job is easiest. It's love your people. It's just as simple as that. You've got to love your people, and they've got to see that love going into. Now, sometimes that love's tough love, but you've got to love your people to go into, because we've seen this push over the past, couple of years of the they come first, right? We hear that all the time. So Danny, for you, who's your they? Who's the they for you when you show up to work?
Well, it's for first, it's always my wife and my daughter, but then after that comes the community and the crew that I work with.
The community that you're working for, your family and your crew. All right. That's the mindset that being on that rig and working, that's the they you work for. Okay.
Right.
My job, my they is you. My they is the guys that work for me. I got to take care of the guys that work for me so they can take care of the general public, so they can take care of the citizens of things that are going in there. So, that's as a chief, that's our definition of they. If your they is not your people, then you got to, because I promise you, who is Chief Thompson's they?
The
It's his guys.
common,
That's why he has a 96% retention rate. It is his guys. I've got to love my people. I've got to look out for my people. They don't know half the battles that I go through for them, and that's perfectly fine. They don't need to know what all I deal with to work out for them. They just need to know that I'm looking out for them. I don't need to go boast that. I don't need to go out there and say, I did this for you. I did that for you. A successful chief, you know, when things are going right, they're not getting any credit for it. They're behind the curtain making things happen. But when things go wrong, they're standing out front to take that accountability of how we're going to change the worker or do that. So, you know, for me, that's it. You know, I'm working for the they, which are my guys, to love them, to do the best I can for them, and hope that trickles down, that they love each other and they can look out for each other and take care of each other. Everything else we can work out, man. We can work on strategies all day long. We can pull hose lines. We can throw ladders. We can figure out how to spec our rigs. That stuff's going to work itself out with what we do, as long as we're taking care of each other. If we can't take care of each other, all that other stuff's going to fall away.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Love it. Love it. Love it. Chief, I got to say, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to do this. The amount of gems and nuggets that were spilled out in this conversation were great. I can see why Jason was like, hey, this is the guy. So Jason, thank you for listening to this, and Chief, thank you for taking the time to do this.
Really, well, I appreciate it, man. And I made mention to somebody the other day when I was kind of promoting your podcast. You know, there's a lot of podcasts out there, and I found some really great ones over the years, and there's some great leadership podcasts, and there's some great strategy and tactics talk. But what really sunk me into yours quickly was, it's just about people. It's about different people in the fire service, different positions, different places around, and just getting to talk about people and seeing that while we're all got differences, there's a lot of things that we share in similarities as well. And so that's one thing that I've really enjoyed going back. And so, you know, I used to, whenever I was making my road trips to run up to the fire academy in Columbia, or if I was going somewhere else, I was trying to find some random YouTube music playlist to listen at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm busting through your episodes, you know, to go into and just listen to these guys talk and just listen to what they share and go into. So for me, as a follower of your podcast, man, I appreciate what you're doing, and I hope it's something that, because you give a different perspective being in the position that you're in, to provide some insight from these different levels to go into, man. So I think you're doing a jam up job with what you got going.
I truly appreciate that. Really do. And thank you for coming on.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.